are my neighbors. Tune in to Out There to meet some of them. Out There airs every Wednesday from 4 to 5 in the afternoon with me, Ruthie Woodring. Come with me and my recorder to meet people and plants and think about ways we can share the world. That's Out There every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. here on Valley Free Radio, WXOJLP, 103.3 FM, Northampton. Archived editions of Out There are online at weatherbeard.com/RUTHY. Get out if you can. But if you can't get out, tune in.
I found a boy today. It looks so good. Why did you throw it away?
You want to learn to fix your bike? How to keep it tuned up so it's there for you when you need it? Or maybe you know already, but you just need to borrow a bike-specific tool that you don't have. Well, come to the Bike Lab.
Almost every Saturday since 2004, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., here in Northampton at 12 Northern Avenue.
Come with your bike or your questions.
And your willing attitude.
Spare parts scavenger hunt every weekend.
Venga para el Bike Lab de Northampton. Y se divertirá mucho, le enseñará muchas lecciones cómo arreglar bicicletas.
All repairs guaranteed to the end of the driveway.
Details are online at pedalpeople.coop. That's the Saturday Bike Lab at 12 Northern Avenue, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. They say freedom isn't free, but at the Bike Lab it is.
Ya súbase a la bici, compa. Trépese a la de montaña, la bici urbana, la bici cross. Lléguele a la bicicleta, ya de menos a la eléctrica o a la estática, ya no hay tos. Llegaré pedaleando en el viaje de allá para acá.
And you're listening to Out There. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Dwayne Rainey is also here in the studio with me. Thanks for coming in, Dwayne. Today's show is going to be an interview with Allison and Fig of Mixed Race Mixtape. Mixed Race Mixtape is a hip-hop theater performance with rap, monologue, and movement to start conversations about identity, race, and class. And its opening night is this Saturday evening, August 8th, at Hampshire College at the Emily Dickinson Main Stage. The doors open at 6:30 and the show starts at 7. Tickets are a sliding scale, $5 to $100. And proceeds will be used to help the group make shows more accessible for people in other places. So I met with Allison and Fig, who are two of the people involved. And here they are, introducing themselves and the show.
I'm Allison Smart. I'm the producer and designer for Mixed Race Mixtape. And the show is directed by Jarrell Watkins, stage managed by Julissa Campbell, and our awesome band is Mara Penitzer, Reed Sutherland, Ian Haas, and Mitali Banda.
And my name is Andrew Fig Figueroa, and I am the writer and main performer of Mixed Race Mixtape.
Could you just say briefly what Mixed Race Mixtape is or is about?
Definitely. Mixed Race Mixtape is a hip-hop theater piece that's talking about mixed race identity, specifically within the Mexican context. And it includes live instrumental hip-hop, spoken word, movement, and rap to create a pretty non-traditional but very interactive theater piece.
Where is the show at? What stage is it in?
Well, we're in Tech Week, so our first show of the tour is August 8th at Hampshire. So we're just running through the whole show with all design elements at this point over and over and tweaking everything, making transitions smooth.
Can you say what the show is about a little bit more specifically and maybe talk a little bit about how it came about from your personal experience?
Definitely. So Mixed Race Mixtape is about a character named Fig. I'm ready to give some background info. It's autobiographical fiction about my own experience coming from a mixed class, multicultural and bilingual household in Southern California. And some stuff tweaked and kind of added on in order to include like a greater narrative. Some work I've done in like more theory stuff. And it's about Fig and his experiences in school, learning about American history and encounters with police and family members and trouble with language. It's a coming-of-age story, really, just about my life, Fig's life. Yeah.
Cool. I'm really interested in identity and how that's created. It seems like it's affected both by where you are as well as who you are. I wonder if you could speak to that.
Definitely. I think context is super important when trying to figure out people's identities, and that's definitely a point of the show that tries to make as well, that I change who I am to who I'm around and where I'm at all the time. Because when you're moving, you know, moving from Southern California to the East Coast to like Western Mass specifically, in a college town, especially a private liberal arts school, where, you know, your identity becomes even more apparent because you are maybe for the first time one of the only brown people rocking mm-hmm. around, and, you know, especially Mexican people walking around. And I think when you move from space, comfort changes, and you're no longer with your parents, at least in my experience. So no one understands the math, and now I'm just kind of this individual by myself, and people are continuously asking, like, what are you? Or, like, where are you from? And I'm trying to figure out, you know, exactly how I exist in this space. And I think with that comes class communities as well. When you change from one class community to the other, there's definitely, like, you know, me walking around a really ritzy, like, white neighborhood, I get a lot more, like, paranoid that, like, I'm going to step on someone's, you know, garden and they're going to call the cops, or I'm going to have a weird interaction with somebody, people give me strange looks, as, you know, different to me walking around in a larger, like, people, you know, person of color community, and also maybe even getting strange looks that, like, I shouldn't be there, or, like, that, like, they're confused of where I am, too, or caught in the middle of all of that.
I'm curious about trying to find that balance or that line between appreciating who you are and your uniqueness without being, like, tokenizing or without, like, calling you out or pointing you out. Okay, so as a white person in a mostly white town of Northampton, like, I try and be friendly with everybody I see, but I try and make extra sure that I'm friendly to people of color, just, like, making eye contact and saying hi when I come across people. And so, like, is that fetishizing? Then I think, well, when I'm, like, one of the few white people in a place that's mostly people of color, I know I really appreciate it when they look at me and say hi and don't just ignore me. Because when they just ignore me, then I'm like, I don't know if they want me here or not. Or so I wonder how that is for you with an opposite, you know, a different power structure.
Yeah, definitely racism. Different power structure. I love being acknowledged, you know, I think, you know, I like being seen and people to recognize me and not be scared about my presence or threatened or also, like, curious about it or just, like, not really knowing how to deal with me. And I don't know if Allison, you want to take this question more so.
It's an interesting paradox, right? I'm white, for people who don't know. And it's an interesting paradox to think about, okay, how do I acknowledge that this person is different in a space surrounded by white people, that this is a person of color in a largely white space, and how do I, like, honor that and acknowledge that? I think there's, like, a good intention behind it, but that question in and of itself is, like, not something that should exist. And I'm not saying that race doesn't exist or, like, we should be, like, we're in a post-racial society. That's not real either. But just dissecting, like, why we even have to make that consideration for people of color is an interesting and, like, difficult one. I don't know if I'm answering this correctly.
Like, why can't we just see people as people?
No, because that, like, erases people's experience. It's more just, like, the extra effort to go and make them feel included can often, like,
make them feel
even more like a sore thumb. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, brown man, I see you here. Just like, oh, great, thanks. Just put the light on me.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like, take something that I can relate to for a second. It's like, being a sound engineer, as a woman, I'm always in spaces that are surrounded by men, whether it's, like, they're the musicians on stage or they're the techs backstage. And for someone to be like, it's really great to have a woman here. It's like, okay, that's cool. Like, I'm glad you recognize that you exist in a space that's mostly men, but also your, like, self-congratulatory statement of, like, oh, I noticed, and also that...
Yeah,
that it's like, it's just a double-edged sword. It doesn't solve anything. It makes me feel like, yeah, I am the only woman in this room. And like, oh my God, now everybody's looking at me. And like, what does that mean? And like, am I dressed correctly? Did I say something wrong? I have to be 100 times better than all these other people, these other men. Otherwise, they're going to, like, totally just think I'm incapable. yeah, the extra attention just makes it even worse.
I agree. I think the question is complicated because, yeah.
Intention, the intention is good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
most of the time, but it's also the effect. Who is that?
I wonder if, like, who it's for at the uh-huh. root of it as well.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Thinking about like, oh, how can a white person appreciate me? It's like, you know what? Like, I don't really care about them, you know, being able to appreciate me,
because that sounds like it's for,
yeah. So exactly. So it's like, just, you know, like, let me live. I mean, but don't do anything racist, like, you know, like just don't be a dick. But like, it's complicated. But that's kind of, you know, the state of race and matter. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it too is that we make mistakes as we go along, and hopefully we learn from them.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I definitely don't think that. I mean, obviously, if everyone was perfect, then we wouldn't exist the way that we are. But yeah, it's things to learn.
So, Fig, we met playing Ultimate Frisbee last month, and at that game, I remember counting 15 men and 3 women.
Definitely.
And I wondered if you were counting sameness and difference, too, but in a skin color kind of way.
Oh, yeah. Every single space. Every time I go out, every store, every Ultimate Frisbee, especially for, like, sports-related things, because there's, like, a lot of testosterone one uh-huh. and, like, you know, kind of, like, hyping up happening. And it's very, like, I see, like, all these white men. And especially, you know, there was only 3 women there. There's only, like, 1 brown person or 2 brown people. And I make an extra effort as a fellow brown person to, like, let them know that, like, yo, what's up? Like, we out here. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? That specific day, I can't necessarily remember, but I'm very conscious of, like, when there are POCs at Ultimate Frisbee Games. Mm-hmm. I remember that this student, Phoenix, who's this Puerto Rican student who came one day. And he was like, oh, I'm going to start coming a bunch. And I, you know, I was talking with him about my show. And, like, you know, I was trying to, like, if he had any questions, like, told him, like, you know, I help him out or whatever. And I haven't seen him since. And I think about it all the time, always hoping that he would show up and come out. And he was a high school student. And, you know, he was living in Holyoke, so I don't know if transportation was an issue or what. But I definitely think about him not being there and maybe why he didn't feel, like, comfortable being there. Or I think kind of greater answer from that question is that I'm very conscious of all the spaces I move into, yeah. thinking about, like, being the only brown person and what other brown people are here and how to, like, create community in small spaces.
I'm curious how often strangers ask you where you're from and how do you respond to that?
You know, I'm gonna let Allison take that because she spends a lot of time with me.
It happens pretty often, and most people don't actually, like, when I've been with Fig, most people aren't like, where are you from? They ask some sort of even weirder version of that question, like, what kind of blood do you have, or what language do they speak where you're from?
Where's that last name from?
Yeah, where's that last name? Oh, you're Italian?
Italian? Oh, that, yeah. Greek?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it seems to me like that's appropriate once you've developed a relationship with a person, but as strangers, is that appropriate?
Well, I mean, I think when you develop a relationship with a person, that person will open up to you.
Yeah.
I think there's some, you know, like, you'll see them connect these things, or, like, on the phone with his mother speaking Spanish, or father, and, like, you know, talking about, like, these, you know, oh, I go to Mexico every year for Christmas, my abuelos. You know, you just, like, when you become friends with somebody, you start just, like, knowing about their lives, and that's how you, like, know about it, opposed to the questions, which is really kind of the problem, the root, is they are assuming that I am not from here, or that I, and which is, like, immediately othering, even though I am from here, I was born here and raised here, and, you know, English is my first language, and I mean, I get this stuff all the time. Like, it's daily. I remember Allison, like, it's just like, wow, I really, like, being surprised. That's why I had her answer it, because when we first started getting into this project and talking about the work and some of the content in the piece, I'm thinking about Ambiguously Brown, the piece that you played last week, and, you know, having, like, the R as one of the vocabulary words. It was after another interview or a photo shoot that we had where the lady who took the photos were, like, very curious about my last name and, like, where I was from and, like, and assuming that, oh, it must be this or it must be that. Or it's like, oh, Figueroa? I'm like, oh, Figueroa. And then she just being like, wow, it really is all the time. You get this. It's not even, like, just, like, in this
and
content.
We had been talking about, like, asking where are you from. Like, we were talking about the show, and yet people still... It's as if us saying it makes them want to ask more, just to see if the way they're asking it is okay. And just, like, as a general rule, one thing that's really been brought home for me is, like, I just don't ask people where they're from. Like, it's so true. that if you are friends with somebody, it's going to come up in conversation. They're going to tell you about their lives. You don't need to be like, you know, I don't ask anybody where they're from at this point. I just don't do it, because there's so much there that can be triggered for people that you don't even know.
And I think there's something to say about that then defining who the person is. It's like, all right, great, you're Irish, now I know. Or like, mm-hmm. I knew you were Mexican, like, you're from Mexico, okay, cool. Now, like, I'm right, I, like, see you, I know who you are, let's move on.
Because it's not for them, it's for me. If I was asking someone with an Irish accent, oh, where are you from, and they said Ireland, it's because I want them to validate my assumption about them. If I go up to a brown person, I'm like, hey, where are you from? They're like, Mexico. I'm like, okay, great. I was right. Or I was wrong, and now I know that you're from Mexico.
Like, fit in your box and have to categorize in some way.
It's not because, it's not for them. It's for me. And that ultimately is selfish and privileged.
I guess for me, I was thinking more about white people. Like, for me, I'm always interested in where people are from. If they're from Florence, like, where do you live? What street am I going to see you on? Or
where do you live is different than where are you from.
And also, where are you from? It's true that someone could be asking me where I'm from, and, like, I'm going to engage with that answer as someone who gets that in a different way. I'm still going to engage with it, because I give people the benefit of the doubt. I'm going to be like, oh, where? Well, I'm here for school, but I grew up in Southern California. And if they're like, oh, great, perfect, they're happy with that, then I know that their intention was just like, maybe you're from California, or like, oh, you don't really know this place that well, or like, because I don't, and like, my accent is not necessarily like Western Massey, or like, my swagger isn't. So like, that makes sense. Like, I'm okay with that if the conversation ends there. But the follow up really shows the intention of, no, I mean, where are you really from?
Okay.
And it's just like, I don't know what you mean. Like, I was born in Orange County. Is that what you mean? It's like, Hoke Hospital? Like, and then it's just like, oh, I'm sorry, I mean, like, where are your parents from? Then I know that, like, they're trying to find something deeper opposed to, where do you live? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I'm down on Eastern. I live on Eastern. Like, oh, cool. We must see you around sometime. Mm-hmm. And then that's it. It's like, okay, I see your intention, and, like, we're cool. Like, we're fine.
Mm-hmm. Why is it so important for people to feel like they know what country or continent or if someone's from?
I don't know.
I mean, a hypothesis would be, I mean, especially as white people, like Fake said, we walk around every day and see other white people, and we don't think, oh, I wonder if their ancestry is Irish or Welsh. We don't think about that. We're just like, oh, they're white. Cool, we're all white. Yay. And actually, that thought doesn't even, like, go through our heads, because we are just, most of us are just used to being surrounded by whiteness all the time. Mm-hmm. I think it's important, and by important, I don't mean, like, actually important, but I think people feel compelled to ask. Because we're trained to point out difference and to squash it. I mean, on every level, race included. I think, for me as a young girl growing up, I mean, all teens feel this, right? This idea that, like, you gotta be the same. You gotta, like, conform to be cool. Some people do, some people don't, but that is kind of a good small example of how our culture really tries to stamp out difference.
So I'm wondering, Fig, when you fill out a form that asks you to check a box, how do you approach that, or how does that feel to you?
It's actually perfect, because that's the first scene in our show.
Yep.
So come see the show.
Yeah. Is others still a category on some forms?
Yeah, which is really swell. it's just like, oh, great, I'm other. There is fill in the blank now some places. And at that point, I just want to with them, you know? Like, why even put anything?
Mars.
I'm ambiguously brown.
Yeah.
Or like Indiang Locano. Tiger Woods did this really cool thing when he was coming up. And now one of the only brown people in the white space. I mean, like, golf is, like, the whitest thing. And, like, he's killing it, you know? People love him. But they want to know when he's here on the spotlight where he's from, because they see his parents, you know, coming to games and being supportive, and his father's, like, black passing, his mother's Asian passing, and, you know, he's this kind of, you know, black passing, but also kind of ambiguously brown. So they always want him to be able to choose sides. So that's what it's all about. It's about picking boxes so we can then put you into this box and figure it out. But Tiger Woods is like, you know what? I'm just going to mess you guys up. And he would always say he was coddling the Asian. Uh-huh. Which is really these, like, four identities that he associated with, maybe just, like, in very literal senses. And he put them all in words together. And
What did you say, Asian?
Coddling the Asian.
Coddling the Asian?
Yeah. It's like hard to say, hard to pronounce, and
like
people
cobbling together.
Yeah, sure, whatever.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. and so no one could really kind of figure it out, and it was hard to pronounce. They like didn't like understand it. They kept on questioning him, like, no, what is it? Like, what is that? It doesn't mean anything. Like, what are you? And he would keep on saying the same answer, just to throw him with a curveball, and they can just be kind of, they can just be like stuck and pissed off, angry that they couldn't, like, you know.
Yeah, people get upset when they can't. In our society, we're always led, like, through media with, like, movies that, for instance, tie up with a happy ending, or news stories that present the good and the bad. We're always, like, trained to just be like, well, if we can't get the answer that we want, or if it's not simple enough, to be frustrated with that. I think that's why the conversation about race on a national scale, it frustrates a lot of people, because it, we know the conversation about race isn't something that ties up with a bow at the end or has just one or two answers. There are so many answers. It's a deep subject and very complex, and you have to like embrace the ambiguity. And I think we as a society on the whole are not willing to do that with a lot of things, especially with people's identity.
Yeah, also, I mean, specifically within the context of the boxes, there is no box for Mexican or Puerto Rican or Dominican. Racial categories don't include any kind of Latino group within the racial categories. And we're definitely not white, you know? But at the same time, within our, you know, respective countries, there is, like, a racial line of, like, skin tone. And especially when you think about these, like, Caribbean countries, like Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic, Cuba, it's like there are black Latinos and there are white Latinos. And there are things in between as well. But I think when you move to the context of the United States, whiteness becomes no longer, like, there's just skin pigmentation. Or, like, how about, like, us brown people who are literally not white, but also, like, not black, and how we fit in the black-white binary. And within, like, the box of the United States, like on a census or whatever, there's three categories and then a lot of specific Asian categories that exist under the racial, but not a specific Latino category.
It'll be an interesting exercise. Come see the show, because it's a part of the show that everybody gets to interact with.
Mm-hmm. Filling out a census.
So come and find out how you react to having to fill out a box.
Yeah.
See how it feels.
I'm going to stop the interview right there. We'll continue later on, but I just want to say you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio, WXOJ LP 103.3 FM, Northampton, and streaming online at valleyfreeradio.org. Out There airs every Wednesday from 4 to 5, and it's usually interviews of people around town and environmental, racial justice themes and random things. At 5 o'clock, Democracy Now! Is on. And at 6 o'clock, a local show, Alternatively Speaking, with Dr. Saskia Cote. And Dwayne, do you have any announcements you'd like to share?
Do I? Yeah, here's one. Land of the Free, the story of the Angola 3 film focusing on struggle for racial justice in the Louisiana prison system. Louis Ahern's Real Cost of Prison will lead the discussion, sponsored by the Northampton Committee to Stop War. This is at Forbes Library Community Room in Northampton from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. Monday, August 10th, 2015.
All right, thanks, Dwayne. We're going to get back to the interview with Fig and Allison of Mixed Race Mixtape, a show that's playing at Hampshire College this Saturday, August 8th, this Saturday evening. But I'm going to play this song. This is Amanda Marshall, and the song is Double Agent.
Blonde hair and the particular way that my lips are shaped, that my body takes when you talk to me. What do you know when you know me? Don't find me under categories. You're deceived, you don't know me. I'm not only surface country. What you don't know about me is I'm a double agent on my mama's side.
Put your hands like an MC. Bet you never get stopped by the police. You never ask me about me.
No, no, no.
About how I feel when you call all your white friends homeboy and nigga and homie. Oh, please, it hurts me. And you don't see what you don't know about me. Yes.
I told you everybody's got a story.
I'm a double agent on my mama's side. Should I hear you say just blows my mind. Every time I recognize that who I am to you is not a lie. I don't have to volunteer and say that I was born a particular way. I got no uniform, I'm camouflaged in any lie. Obviously you can't tell I'm a double agent on my mama's side. I am invisible,
I am.
Am I responsible?
I am.
I'm in between it all. Who is the enemy? Yeah. I am part of your plan. My honesty is contraband.
Molecules, calluses, family jewels. I'm no fool. We went to the same school. Some of your best friends are just like me.
Just like me.
But when they're not around, you make jokes and conspire. The fire gets higher and I feel the heat rising underneath. Who is more deceived?
What you don't know about me is I'm a double agent on my mama's side. And should I hear you say just blows my mind. Every time I recognize that who I am to you is not a lie. I don't have to bomb, don't have to say that I was born no particular way. I got no uniform, I'm camouflaged in any lie. Obviously you can't tell.
And that's Amanda Marshall with Double Agent. Now, as soon as I can get this computer back to the other thing, we're going to hopefully I can continue with the interview with Allison and Fig.
Let's hope.
About the Mixed Race mixtape.
I think it's weird, too, because there's a mark, All That Apply. There's a mark, All That Apply.
Yeah, he was talking about the census.
On some forms. But even that is hard because I don't identify as white. I like to use the chocolate milk metaphor. You got chocolate and you got milk. When you put it together, it's not chocolate and milk. It's chocolate milk and it's a whole new color and a whole new thing. So, I don't necessarily like marking more than one box. Especially in my case since there's no other boxes that would apply. That's like a step that they thought they were making in the right direction. And be like, okay, now you can say all your things. And some people are happy about that. You know, some people, like, want to claim too many identities. And, like, you know, cool. You know, do you. But for me, in my understanding of race and identity and my own claiming of identity is I don't want to associate with whiteness as, like, my identity. Mostly because of how I've been perceived growing up in my life by all my surroundings, which have made me think otherwise. And I'm okay with that. I'm happy with that.
Can you talk about that a little bit more, about events growing up that have helped shape your identity?
Yeah, definitely. So I think one of the things in my context specifically is that why my white mother moved to Mexico and lived there for 15 years and then met my father and had my brother there and moved to the States after that. So both my parents speak Spanish. Like, my mom is very, like, culturally aware of, like, Mexican traditions. And even sometimes is the one that, like, prompts those things. I think, you know, whenever someone dies in my family, we make a whole, like, shrine, which is kind of off of, like, the Dia de la Muerte. And my mother's the one who, like, starts making those shrines and things. You know, we're blessed enough and privileged enough to go to Mexico once a year, always for winter break. I've been going there for the last, like, 16 or 17 years now. So just something that's been so, like, ingrained in my identity. You know, we grew up in Southern California, you know, near, like, large Latino populations. So it's just something that's always been, like, a part of my going to, like, family friends' houses and family friends' parties. Just, like, it's, you know, this big, like, Mexican party. And just things that have been so just part of my life that I haven't had a question otherwise. Those are things in the household. But outside of it, I've always had a claiming to my Mexican identity. And because of that, everyone around me from a young age has, like, put that on me as well. And then my family is very, like, proud of that. And sometimes it's complex with my white mother, her feelings, and I definitely, like, put them in question, and so does she, which, you know, I appreciate. But she's also very much involved in empowering me as a young Mexican boy and kind of, like, retranslating narratives. I went to go see the Alamo movie when I was really young, and I remember both of us getting super frustrated with it. Because this epic movie and, like, all these, like, brave men that, like, died trying to, like, protect the land. And, like, the Mexicans were the bad guys that came and killed them. And then finally, the very last scene, it was, like, all the Americans coming back and taking Texas and killing all these Mexicans. Like, so epic and so patriotic. I remember, like, me and my mom having a conversation about it, being pissed, you know? My mom was like, don't believe that. That's, like, a lie. And, like, you know, already feeling like it threw me off, and I was pissed because I was like, no, that's what? No, Mexicans were, like, they were taking the land from Mexicans. And my mom reinforcing those ideas as well and always having me question whiteness and white supremacy. My mom's, like, a pretty prominent activist in Southern California and specifically working with immigrant detainees, people, like, without documents. So we've just been culturally and politically very involved in Mexican communities. So with me, like, I've always grown up, that's what I've been. I've been Mexican. And never ignorant of the fact that my mother's not Mexican. And a lot of it, too, is because, like, my mom's white family and whiteness lacks this kind of idea of culture a lot of the time. You know, like, I had Thanksgiving with my aunts and uncles, and that was cool, and, like, I love them. But there was, like, something kind of deeper that was lacking. So I always just resonated more with my Mexican family and culture.
I want to go back a minute to talking about the boxes with, like, Black Lives Matter movement and those sort of black-white boxes. I saw one sign, I think, that said Black and Brown Lives Matter. And do you have any thoughts on that being inclusive or...
Definitely. I'm an ally in the Black Lives Matter movement. I don't think it's necessary ever to say Brown Lives Matter, and definitely never to say All Lives Matter, because within the context of the movement, what we're talking about is black lives and being killed every day. Black women, black men, transgender people of color, black transgender people killed by police, and, you know, kind of dealing with that on a daily basis. And within the movement and what's happening specifically recently with all the police killings is a black issue. And I don't feel like I need to be included.
Yeah. I think also the Black Lives Matter movement, like Fig was saying, it's all about context. And the Black Lives Matter movement was created by black women who were specifically focused on creating a national dialogue and movement of solidarity and liberation for black lives. Not that they're not interested in brown lives or white people or whatever, because they do activism work across the spectrum with incarcerated youth, of people of color, with undocumented immigrants, with women, everything. They're amazing activists. But their specific intention as black women was to make this movement. And so to say black and brown lives matter is a great sentiment. It's totally true. But it's not the movement Black Lives Matter.
Yeah. Definitely. I completely agree and am totally angry when people deface any kind of Black Lives Matter mural or graffiti and then put, and brown lives or all lives matter. It's just like, yeah, we get it. Of course, all lives matter. That's the whole point. You know, I have no issue with that and completely support the Black Lives Matter movement and think that what they're doing is incredible and want to be an ally as much as I can. And it's separate from my own work, but also included.
So one of the things about identity that I'm curious about is, it seems like often if there's like two parents and one is like looks pretty white and one is considered black, the baby is often considered biracial. But then when that child grows up, very often they'll be considered black. How and why does that happen? Could you speak to that?
Yeah, definitely. So like, there's this crazy thing called recessive genes. And what happens a lot of time is when you mix chocolate with milk, the chocolate is just a lot more prominent of a substance and becomes a darker shade. And because we're a society so deep-rooted in racism and just what we can see on such a superficial level, that person is, you know, not white. So they are not white.
Yeah.
That's my answer.
Yeah. It goes back to what I was saying before about people don't like it when the answer is not easy. And white supremacy defines a lot of things in this culture, specifically identity, and where you're allowed to be and where you're allowed to fit, what you're allowed to present yourself as, or we'd like to think that we get to define that. And people who grow up of mixed backgrounds are often propelled by white supremacy into feeling like they have to fit in one or the other, and I think that's one of the things Mixed Race Mixtape is trying to actively offer a counter-narrative to.
I could just drop a few words that go back to the initial question of thinking about why biracial people, mixed racial, multiracial people are usually often categorized later in their lives as a person of color or as completely black or as, you know, Mexican, opposed to being like, oh, mixed and half this, half that. So one drop rule is something. Japanese internment camps during World War II, when Japanese people were put in internment camps, people who are 1/4 Japanese were put into internment camps. That's 1/4 Japanese. I mean, also the idea of anchor babies within the Latino context and how, you know, Mexican women, Mexican men are just here to reclaim California, so they start impregnating and, you know,
having babies
with as many people as possible so they can, like, repopulate the Mexican population and then just take over.
I never heard that.
What? Anchor babies? That was a huge thing in the late 90s, anchor babies.
Yeah.
It was taking advantage of the naturalization rule. Not naturalization, citizenship. When you're born on American soil, you're an American citizen. Fox News had this whole thing of Latino women are having babies here, Mexicans were having babies here, so that their children would be American citizens, and they would grow up to take over the United States. I'm pretty sure they included as part of that narrative later on that the Dreamers, okay, now these anchor babies are coming of age and we're trying to get them a college education. How dare we?
How dare we?
Send them back to Mexico.
So I feel like a few decades ago, the terms like internalized oppression, internalized racism were much more common. I feel like I don't hear that term anymore. Has it been replaced with a different way of thinking, or do you know anything about that?
I still think that hella brown people have internalized racism. And, I mean, white people just like bathe in it. So, like, I don't know who you think that term was referring to, but at least the context that I understand that term to be in is usually speaking about other people of color, other Latinos, Mexicans, black people, Asian people, and how they've just been so taken over by white supremacy and socialized by schools and the surroundings and money and capitalism that they then start perpetuating racism as well. And that kind of internalized part is that, like, Don Lemon, what you doing? You know, like you just, like, you're making it so bad for other black people. But internalized racism for me is when other people of color are perpetuating either racial stereotypes or are, for example, when a black person gets killed by police, siding with the police officer, siding with whiteness and being like, oh, he was just doing his job. That young black man was threatening or was coming at his life or threatening his life. And just like, come on, like, you don't see that you're at risk, like, you're threatened, like, you're not safe. And like, why are you siding with them? It's just so deep. It's so ingrained in their, like, walk and their speech and their understanding and their education that it's so hard to break from. And it's scary to break from, because the moment that you begin to realize that you're unsafe is when you realize that you're unsafe and that your life could be killed at every moment. So ignorance is bliss and ignorance is safety and comfort. So when it comes to internalized racism, like, a lot of it comes from that. And it's scary. And, like, I get angry at other brown people who are perpetuating racism and are putting blame on people of color when it comes to these type of happenings. But at the same time, like, I feel so sorry for them that they have to, like, resort to this just to protect themselves when they need to know that they're not safe, regardless of what they say out in public, or regardless of how many people, white people, like them, and how many white people say that this is my token black friend, and they can shake their hand and say, yes, I am. It's not going to help them in the long run.
I also think the term internalized misogyny is something that's still very relevant. The idea that women have imposed patriarchy on themselves. It's the same thing. People of color impose white supremacy on themselves, in addition to having white supremacy imposed upon them.
Yeah.
Yep. I feel like I see that in my own life sometimes, with not speaking up as much as I feel like maybe I would if I was male. Do you see it in your life?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Every day I endeavor to be a better feminist. Fig and I talk about this all the time. I think for us specifically, but also I think for anybody who is a victim of oppression, and most people are, that it is constantly surprising to me, and I consider myself a very strong, intelligent woman who is very capable of standing up for herself and for others when appropriate. And it constantly surprises me when I'm confronted with such direct racism or misogyny, how I am just completely dumbfounded and don't say anything, or say something that's so weak that later I look back on it and I'm like, what was I doing? That was so dumb. Which is another interesting cycle in oppression, is that then you, the victim of oppression, blame yourself for not standing up to oppression, even though all your life you've been socialized not to stand up to oppression and speak truth to power. So that's funny. And by funny, I mean not funny. I work a lot with feminist organizations, with young girls, and Fig was just a counselor for 11 teenage girls in an arts and activism camp. I think we can both speak to seeing really strong, amazing people struggle to speak truth to power when it's time. It's just hard. It's a struggle. We can't get down on ourselves for that, though. We got to keep trying. Yeah. The struggle is real.
Yeah, maybe you could talk about how your show has been empowering. Maybe? Or I don't know.
Yeah.
And how you want it to empower others.
Yeah.
Yeah. My show is everything I've ever wanted to say.
When it comes to my identity and my thoughts on race and class and authenticity, which is a huge theme within the show and a huge theme within Identity United States, is authenticity, being a real blank, you know, and that exists along many platforms. And I think the process of the show and being able to put this down on a page and then put it on the stage and have conversations about it and then be able to give it back to people who for me, I feel like need to hear it, or who haven't been able to write it down for themselves yet, or have been, you know, and there's this line in the show, have been split because of these lies. This is my opportunity to be whole again through what I've written. And I have a better understanding of myself and my authenticity and being who I am regardless of who's questioning, and be able to claim my community again and claim myself, because so many people, specifically young brown and black people, have been, I like to use the idea of like a paintbrush. So like we're born with canvases and we're born with a series of colors, let's say. You know, so you're born into a racial category. You're born into a class background. Class can change, though. A lot of time you grow up with a class as a culture, and those type of things stay, regardless of coming up on new money or not. But then kind of throughout these things that you know, you're born in a place, potentially with a language or a language that you're going to learn. But kind of through life, these different things are manipulated and changed, and you as a person with these things you're born into are then drawn for you. You don't have the access to your own paintbrush or your own pencil or writing utensil, if you will. And throughout your life, you know, media, white supremacy, the government, other people, racism are painting you and writing yourself. So a mixed race mixtape is about rewriting yourself.
That's actually our tagline, is rewrite yourself. And yeah, I think the show is empowering for someone who, it's not my story, right? But it's still an empowering experience for me, and I think for a lot of other people that are going to see the show, white or not white, but hopefully very empowering for people of color and educational for people who are white, to see something that is often talked about in such broad strokes in our culture, race, identity, to be put into a personal perspective, so that we can then have, and theater and music do a great job of this, have a personal connection to that issue. And so the next time Fox News or CNN runs a story and presents the narrow view of it, we have a personal connection to a narrative that's not so simple, that's more complex, and maybe causes us to question those things. And it's kind of like a ripple effect. You come to the show, you have a personal connection, you see these things that are happening, you start developing your larger understanding, and then you go out into the world and you have a larger understanding, a more complex understanding of your own identity, of other people's identities, of the way that our culture shapes people's identities.
I just want to add one more thing, and I think it's what Alex is getting to. A lot of conversation about race right now, it's super ambiguous. You know, everyone's having the conversation about race, but no one's having the conversation about race. And it's these huge terms that are so broad and so separate from the individual and so separate from the person who feels these every single day, who has to write a play, who has to spend his last year of college, first year out of college, working on this story. I, like, couldn't write about anything else because I can't move on until I figure it out. Every space I go into, every, you know, Frisbee game, every store, every new city, every interview, every, you know, musician, my bands, people I can get to come on and play with me, I always constantly have to be thinking about who I am in the space, who everyone else is, how I'm being viewed, how I'm performing my authenticity of being a Latino and, you know, not wanting to be questioned on being, like, fake or whatever. It's like racism is these huge institutional systematic ways of oppression. But they are also, like, our daily life that we have to, like, maneuver. You know how tiring that is? And so this story is countering to this conversation that we're apparently having about race that is so unpersonalized and so broad and so ambiguous, and really talking about my story and a lot of our stories, and putting name and putting face and putting these encounters and talking about people to people and these interactions, which really is what's lacking in the conversation about race.
If people can't make it to the show, are there ways they can support your project?
Definitely. You can go to mixedracemixtape.com and click on the donate button in our menu bar and support our work. We go to lots of communities in Massachusetts and around the country that are under-resourced and can't afford to pay our artist fees, transportation, food, accommodation, all the things it takes for us to do a show, and we're going to go there anyway. And we need your support to be able to bring this show to people who have never been inside the theater before, who can't afford to take time off work to pay a $50 ticket to go see a theater show. We want to make it as accessible as possible, and you can help us do that at mixedracemixtape.com.
How much are tickets for the show on Saturday?
They're on a sliding scale. It's a fundraiser to support our upcoming two free performances at City on a Hill Charter School in Roxbury, Massachusetts, for the students and families in that community. So they start at $5, and they go all the way up to $100. If you pay $100, you get a VIP snack and chat with the cast and crew, and some swag, posters, T-shirts, etc.
Anything else you want to say?
Now come support the show. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah.
This is a clip from the show called Shortcut.
High school blue, red light, blue light, red light, high school blues, lights flash. Say high school blues. That's high school blues. When the red light, blue light, red light, high school blues, lights flash. Say hello, sir, where you going? Sit down, take a seat for just a moment.
ID on you?
Please show me ID. If not, tell me where your home is, and where you walking from, and where you headed to. Keep your legs out, why you getting attitude? Better watch your mouth, boy.
Get up,
there ain't a couch, boy. Oh, what's this? That you didn't have a wallet, no ID to show me. Not Mr. Police. Well, guess what, homie? I just called back up to check behind the church you were just walking from. I'll only ask once, what were you doing there? Drinking, drugs, graffiti? Will I find any broken bottles or guns? And son, don't think that you're sneaky. Meeting up with friends or what? Staying out late? Now get onto the ground again, keep them legs straight. Don't even think of running, I'ma go and scan your name. The second car's almost here, better stop the train.
That was a clip, part of a clip, from the Mixed Race Mixtape. You can hear that online at mixedracemixtape.com. Better yet, though, go to the show on Saturday at Hampshire College at 7 o'clock. Doors open at 6:30. The interview today was with Allison Smart and Andrew Fig Figueroa.
and really grateful to them for all the work they put into making the show to give, well, yeah, to help educate people like me and to do the interview with me as well. Few more announcements we want to make. Dwayne, what do you got over there?
Do you have a criminal record? Well, if you do, there's a 5th annual Corey Independence Day. New information about Corey. Join us for the Corey Independence Day. That's Friday, August 7th from 12 to 7 p.m. at Blount Park, 1780 Roosevelt Avenue in Springfield, Massachusetts. There's new Mass Corey laws changed on May 4th, 2012, and the forums, new forums are available there. So they got free food. Yeah, I like that. That's always a get me to go. Oh, another one, East Meets West, Making Massachusetts Nuclear Free. The Citizens Awareness Network is organizing a forum, East Meets West, to be held on Saturday, August 8th, 11 to 1 at the GCTV Studio, 393 Main Street in Greenfield, Mass. I'd like to hear more.
I think that's probably
about
good.
About that?
Where can they find more information?
For more information, you can either call 413-339-5781 or online at cannukebusters.org.
Thanks, Dwayne. Another event I wanted to announce is an event. It's a one-day retreat this Saturday at the Insight Meditation Center in East Hampton in the East Works building. The retreat is entitled Exploring Authentic Relationships Across Difference, Awakening Our Hearts. And it's led by Irena Weissman. There's a suggested contribution of $25 to $40. And this retreat is directed at people who identify as white. Just briefly, I'll read from the website that they, let's see, as we practice the path, Buddhism, or opening our hearts, we explore unconscious beliefs and behaviors that cause harm and suffering to others and ourselves. And one of the ways, one of the areas where this habitual expression takes place is how we as white people are unaware of the ways we build identities of whiteness which cover our hearts and separate ourselves from people of color. By becoming aware of our group identity as whites and by owning the privileges of access to power and resources, we're able to transform ourselves and ability and our ability to be in authentic relationships across differences. Anyway, that's at the Insight Pioneer Valley Center in East Hampton, insightpv.org. And if you missed the beginning of the show where I announced the dance performance on the bike path, there's going to be a dance performance by the Tiny Dance group today in half an hour at 5:30 on the rail trail.
I hope they ain't all pooped by the time they ride up the bike trail.
Well, I think they're used to it because they've been riding around and dancing.
All right.
It's going to be on the rail trail between Straw Ave and Chestnut Street behind 8 High Street where I live, behind my house, where the bench is and the pump, et cetera.
The new pump.
The new pump. Yeah, the pump disappeared on Friday for the first time.
The disappearing pump trick.
So the first time in like about, I don't know, 8 years. And but we replaced it with a more sturdy one.
Yes, indeed.
But we only got like 10 seconds left. So
Valley Free Radio, 10th anniversary party tomorrow night.
Tomorrow.
13th floor music lounge at JJ's Tavern.
Thanks, Dwayne, for remembering that again. Democracy Now! Is coming up at 5 o'clock.
You are listening to Democracy Now! On Valley Free Radio, 103.3 WXOJ LP, Northampton.